Yes, President Trump's policies are good for Latinos, too. So writes Steve Cortez, who's a CNN political commentator, and he serves on the Trump 2020 Election Advisory Council. And we're going to talk about this issue right now. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And, Steve, welcome back to the show. It's good, great to have you on, as always.
Hey, Jerry, thank you so much for having me.
Sure. Okay, so you are Hispanic, and you're very enthusiastic about President Trump. Obviously, that's not a conviction all Hispanics share about the president.
Right. Not all, but a growing number, Jerry, I'm very glad to say. And so, you know, I've written about this issue quite a bit since Trump was a candidate, but certainly since he was elected. And I wrote an article in Real Clear Politics recently about the big jump in Hispanic approval for President Trump. So in 1 month from May to June, according to Harvard-Harris polling, the job approval rating for President Trump jumped 10% among Hispanics. And that's just in the world of polling, that's a pretty mammoth move. But I think it's a response, and I believe it's a response to the incredible prosperity that Hispanic Americans are seeing under President Trump. All Americans are seeing improved prosperity, better jobs, better wages within those jobs, and optimism out there, a dynamism in our economy, small business, exciting, optimistic, hiring, investing. So our whole country is benefiting and is prospering, but Hispanics are in particular. And for example, one thing I've written a lot about is the Hispanic unemployment rate, which in the month of June, the most recent report we have, reached an all-time low of 4.6%. In the history of our country, we've only had 9 months where that rate was under 5%. Eight of those nine months ever, Jerry, have come in the last year under the leadership of President Trump. And I don't believe that's just happenstance. It's a result of good policy, tax and regulatory relief. And I think it's also a result of some of the intangibles that I mentioned previously, the optimism and the confidence for consumers, for business, big and small, that has been unleashed in the land. And so Hispanics are particularly benefiting from this wave of prosperity, and they are in return giving their approval to President Trump.
Now, the Democrats promised to try and reverse the tax cuts if they win the midterm elections. Your thoughts on that?
Right. Well, wouldn't that be disastrous? I mean, you know, thankfully, if they win the midterms, they're not going to be able to reverse them because President Trump would surely veto. But the fact that they're even considering it is so absurd and really kind of demeaning, I think, almost to Americans who are seeing rising wages. We don't have second quarter 2018 numbers yet, but for the first quarter of 2018, we had the highest wage increases for any quarter in a decade, average hourly earnings. That's fantastic. And unlike the slow growth years of Obama, where the lion's share of the economic gains of that slow growth era, the lion's share went to only the very upper end of the economic ladder, now we're seeing the opposite. For example, non-managerial workers, so people who are not at the executive level, their wages have risen the most in more than a decade, the most since the year 2000 in the first quarter of 2018. For people without a high school diploma, so those are by definition really the economic underdogs of our society if you didn't finish high school. For those folks, all-time low in unemployment. So we're seeing not only that the economy is accelerating, which is wonderful for everyone, but also that the prosperity is broadening, Jerry. So it's not just the wealthy who are doing well, which was the case under President Obama. It was very ironic for a man who claimed to be for the working man and for our first president of color who claimed to care so much about communities of color, he sure didn't do much for them economically. And now we see the exact opposite unfolding. And the Democrats, if they want to run on tax increases, please, you know, I beg them to, because that's a losing issue for them. And also, I can't wait in the fall, and I think we're going to see a lot of this, to play the tapes over and over in commercials and social media of Nancy Pelosi saying that a $1,000 bonus is just crumbs. And you know what? It might be crumbs to her. She's incredibly wealthy. She lives a very elite San Francisco life. And to her, $1,000 might not mean much. But to the vast majority of Americans, $1,000 is a lot of money. And for some people, it can actually be life-changing, at least in the near term.
Sure. Okay, now, since you deal with Hispanics and the Hispanic vote and so forth, look at all the big pushback lately about the border patrol policies and ICE, and let's deal with some of these. First of all, the separation of the families. And by the way, I read a statistic where it said that 83% of the children that are caught or captured, you know, illegally trying to get into the border. 83% of them were without a parent or guardian. So, in other words, you get this idea that, oh, Trump is so mean. He's separating little children from their parents, you know, maybe even a nursing baby from his mother or whatever. You know, it's like, wait a minute, 83% are not. So let's deal, first of all, with that issue, and then we'll talk about the border, and then we can talk about ICE. Because some people will say, let's abolish ICE.
You're exactly right. When you see the numbers of children who have crossed the border illegally, the vast majority come alone. And how sad for those children, whomever is sending them, whether it's their parents, Amen. Whether they're being trafficked, whether it's gangs. I mean, I think there's all kinds of bad reasons. No, you know, none of them are good, right, why children are approaching the border alone. But it's not a small number. In the last 5 years, we've had about 200,000. The legal term for them is unaccompanied alien children, UACs, under the law. And if a UAC comes to our border, no adults, no parents in tow, our laws say that we do admit them out of empathy for them because we don't want to tell a child who's alone and maybe fleeing something dangerous. You have to go back to that, you know, in Mexico or in Guatemala or wherever it may be. Immediately, it'd be Mexico, of course. That's our border. So they are allowed in. If they have a sponsor in the United States, preferably a relative, but quite frankly, it can be anybody who will just raise their hand and say, an adult, I'll take them. We taxpayers then pay to send these children to them. And there was a lot of angst, by the way, if you remember a few weeks back, about how we couldn't locate a lot of these children. Well, it's not because we lost track of them. It's because the sponsors to whom we sent them stopped communicating with our government, with our authorities, and probably because a lot of them are in fact illegal. So, you know, getting a letter from HHS or from Homeland Security isn't something they're keen to respond to. So here's my long-term solution to that problem, that very vexing problem, is a border wall. If we had a significant barrier on our southern border, we would deter a lot of these children being sent, because I don't think they're choosing it, a lot of them, being sent to unlawfully cross our border. And by the way, there's nothing merciful about us tolerating basically an open border. Instead, we actually encourage a lot of criminality, a lot of misery, and these kids, I think, are the case in point. And then one last point I'd make that's related to gangs. For these older children, you know, as defined by law, you can be 16 or 17 years old, and we know this is happening. This isn't, you know, just hyperbole. ICE tells us this is happening. 16, 17-year-old MS-13 gangbangers or from other transnational gangs are coming from Central America, and they know these loopholes. They're not dumb. They know that if they show up and say, I'm 16, you're a child by our law. You might as well be 6. Again, you are immediately allowed in. Your sponsor could be your cousin, your, you know, friend who's an MS-13 gangbanger who wants you in the United States. You probably want to be in the United States as well. A better life and, unfortunately, more criminal opportunity probably in a wealthier country. We have to wave you in, literally. And some of these are not children. They're men. And some of them are dangerous men, quite frankly. So our laws need to be changed. Our border barricade needs to be built. And all of that will create not just more security and sensibility for our country, but I would also argue for Mexico and for Central America.
Okay, now we hear a lot of pushback against the wall and the strong border policy along the line of along the lines that that's bigoted.
Right. Well, and that's just crazy, first of all, because a wall is not just meant to keep out brown people, like me. It's meant to keep out anyone who doesn't belong here. Other people come across that southern border. But I would also make this point about, I think there's an assumption, certainly in mainstream media and among a lot of Democrats, that all Hispanics favor lax immigration and favor an open border. And that's just not the case. Another poll that I write about in my articles is from The Economist magazine, which is no friend to President Trump, but they did extensive polling of Hispanics, and they found, for instance, in terms of border control policies, almost two-thirds of Hispanics, 64%, say that they support, for people who legally cross, they support arresting them and detaining them, no more catch and release, and detaining them either with their children, if they have children with them, or separated but still detained. So that's a massive number. Only 20% of Hispanics, according to The Economist magazine, only 20% believe that we should catch and release, which is what has been done, which is essentially giving them a citation and saying, you know, show up for court later, which, of course, very few do. So Hispanics are hardly soft border or soft on immigration. And I think one of the reasons is because Hispanics largely deal with the problems that illegal immigration brings. For example, they deal in the labor market. One reason I think Hispanic wages are going up and employment's going up is because they're seeing less competition from illegal workers. When you flood our country with illegal workers, Hispanics actually suffer the most, particularly in the trades, things like construction and janitorial services and those kinds of industries. And then secondly, in terms of dangerous illegal immigrants, and I'm not saying all illegal immigrants are dangerous. Of course, they're not all, or even majority. But for those who are, generally, they're causing problems in Hispanic communities in general. That's where they reside and live and work. They're not generally going to extremely wealthy white suburbs and causing problems. They're doing it in Latino neighborhoods for the most part. And so because of that, I think Hispanics are very aware. And you know, one last point I make about that is, a lot of Hispanic Americans, like my father, who did it the legal way, millions and millions who did, they resent the idea that it's okay for somebody to cheat the system and hop the line, because it's a tough process. It's expensive and time-consuming to become a legal American citizen. It's totally unjust to allow people to cheat that system.
Excellent, excellent remarks here. Am I to understand that according to the poll that you cited from the Economist magazine, that basically two-thirds of American Hispanics support the wall?
Well, they did not ask about the wall, so I can't say that number. But they do support, right now, they support detention until their hearing, so no catch and release. If you have crossed the border illegally, they support them being detained, either with their children or without, but detained in either case. So that's a pretty big deal. Hispanic Americans weren't very different in that poll from, say, white Americans.
Could we say it this way, that two-thirds of Hispanic Americans oppose illegal immigration?
Right. I think that's very fair to say.
Okay. Yes. All right, good. All right, yeah. Well, now let's transition and talk about ICE.
Mm-hmm.
There are many liberals that want to, you know, see it. You know, there's even, you know, a slogan, abolish ICE.
I know. It's crazy. I mean, it's, by the way, I guess they think they're being cute almost and edgy to say that. Can you imagine the consequences if we said we're going to get rid of ICE? I mean, what would go on in this country, the criminality we would see and the human suffering. Mm-hmm. So they're just, you know, they're being absurd. They're acting like spoiled brats. Now, the political part of me, the partisan part of me actually likes it, because please carry that message again into the fall, into November, because I would love to campaign for Republicans on a, you know, not just keep ICE, but strengthen ICE platform while they say eliminate ICE. And but more broadly, as an American, it really bothers me that people vilify and demonize ICE. First of all, ICE is the most Hispanic agency of the federal government, percentage-wise. I mean, and I think that's important for people to know. The mainstream media would have us believe that it's a bunch of, you know, bigoted white thugs, you know, law enforcement thugs who are looking to cause problems for Hispanic people. The opposite is true. This is an incredibly Hispanic agency. They need lots of Spanish-speaking people. They generally operate a lot in the border states, which are heavily Hispanic. So, you know, these are a lot of brave men and women, many of whom are Hispanic Americans, who do hard work for not a lot of money to protect our homeland. And they deserve our respect and our admiration, not the demonization of the left. And I would also point out, you know, that, Jerry, these aren't just previously you saw sort of fringe elements on the left, you know, crazies on social media and at protests and Antifa. Those are the people who attacked ICE and besmirched ICE. Now we're seeing it from very senior, very mainstream Democratic politicians, people like Kamala Harris, Senator from California, Kirsten Gillibrand, Senator from New York, the mayor of New York City, de Blasio. We're seeing it from a lot of people. The chorus is rising. That Ocasio-Cortez, who just won the big upset primary and will likely be the congresswoman from New York City, who's kind of the phenom right now, the young phenom on the left. It's a major part of her platform is to eliminate ICE. So there's really a groundswell for it within the Democratic Party. And I think it's disgusting, and as an American, it really offends me. But as a partisan, there's a part of me that almost giggles because, wow, this is going to be such a weapon for us into November.
Hmm. All right. We're basically out of time. Let me go ahead and give your handle at Twitter. It's at Cortez Steve, and Cortez is spelled with an S, so Cortez Steve. Thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Always great. Thanks, Jerry.